All right, everybody, welcome. I am here with the Oracle of London, Alexander Mercuris. Alexander, hope you're doing well. And today's special guest is Christian Kars. He is coming to us from Belgrade, Serbia, and he is going to tell us what's going on in Serbia, what's going on with Norway, with the EU, and with NATO. Christian, please introduce yourself to everybody. If they don't know who you are, introduce yourself. Tell everybody where they can find you. I'm going to put all the links to connect with Christian in the description box down below. Christian, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Alex and Alexander, for the invitation. To shortly introduce myself, I often say that I am a former NATO aggressor, turning into a warrior for peace, democracy, and the freedom of speech. And people can find me actually on the DRN. I have an author page, so you just put in my name in there and on the DRN.com, and you'll find my profile.
Simple. Easy enough. So, Alexander, we've done many videos on Serbia. We've done many videos covering the Balkans. We've discussed what's going on there, the significance and the importance. You've mentioned many times, Alexander, that you worry about the Balkans. Still to this day, you worry about the region and the fact that things have still not been properly settled in the region, and you have a lot of a lot of disputes and a lot of things that could bubble up in the future and cause trouble, not only in Europe, but in the world. It is a region full and rich with history, but Christian will provide some more context as to what's going on in the region as he is on the ground, and he can let our viewers know what is happening locally, especially in Serbia and in Belgrade. So Alexander, if you would like to jump into this and to throw some questions via Christian, and we'll get this video rolling.
Absolutely. Now, can I just say, there is no one better to discuss this kind of issue with than Christian, because, of course, he is there. He is at the center of the whole crisis, and it is, in my opinion, very much an ongoing crisis. He's in Belgrade. He's in Serbia. He knows the political atmosphere and the political climate in Serbia. And, of course, having been in the NATO and in the NATO forces, which were involved in the great crisis in the Balkans in the 1990s, he is somebody who was there at the origins of much of the current crisis. And one of the things that I always say, and before we get to Christian, is this, that what happened in the 1990s, as well as being a terrible crime, in my opinion, of aggression against a country that wasn't threatening any other countries, was also a profound and very dangerous mistake, because what it has done is that it has created a Serbia which is surrounded on all sides by very unstable micro-states, which are really NATO protectorates, against all of which Serbia has issues. And anybody who is familiar with the history of the Balkans knows how this is an absolute guarantee for a future crisis at some point. And I think people in Brussels, where NATO is based, and in the big European and capitals, and in Washington, at some level sense this. So their major drive at the moment is to try and stabilise the situation to the extent that they can, by drawing Serbia itself into the NATO EU structures. And by doing that, they think they can seal the problems of the Balkans forever and basically stabilize them in the way that they want to. But we are now encountering growing resistance within Serbia itself, and also in some of these unstable micro-states, these NATO protectorates that have been created. So if I can just start, Christian, we have a very clever president in Serbia, but one whom I've noticed many people trust. What do you think the political situation is like there at the moment? And there's been talk of some kind of a deal being done between Serbia and Kosovo. Do you think there's any prospect of that at all? Because that's something the international media are talking a great deal about.
Well, Alexander, I hope you're wrong, that we're not going to see a new war in the Balkans. And you're a man of law. And I think as long as Serbia continues to speak about international law, there is no big prospects of a new war or even a new crisis. When it comes to Kosovo and Metohija, which is the full name of the autonomous province in South Serbia, there is no need to hurry anywhere. According to international law, according to United Nations Security Council Resolution 1244, this is a part of Serbia. I mean, no matter what kind of pressure you have from the EU or from NATO, as long as the Serbian government continues to hold in regard international law, I think the Serbian government is relatively happy with the situation in Kosovo and Metohija. They don't have any obligations to pay for the infrastructure in Pristina, and as long as they do not, I mean, I'm saying this to President Vučić, Aleksandar Vučić, which is the Serbian president. Whenever I'm on some Serbian TV show or something, please, Mr. President, do not sell one square centimeter of Kosovo and Metohija to gain easier access in the EU or NATO or anything. I mean, officially, the Serbian government, they do want to have a membership in the EU. But of course, I'm also a Serbian patriot and a Norwegian patriot, and I share your views about the anti-democratic nature of the EU. So whenever I'm on TV, I'm of course warning Serbians to stay far away from NATO, which is not very hard. But I mean, many Serbians, they think they have the chance to gain some benefits in the European Union. But I mean, we already have a free trade agreement with the EU. I mean, Serbia is the breadbasket of this part of the world. And we can export our agricultural products everywhere in the EU. And moreover, I mean, as you've talked about many times on the show, you've talked about the Eurasian Economic Union, where Serbia has a privileged status for agricultural products, which means that I am now making my business plans to produce Norwegian brown cheese. It's like tasting like caramel. It's excellent if you've never tasted it. And we're starting our production in Serbia, and for Norwegian investors, this is very, very relevant because of trade sanctions, EU and everything. They cannot sell the cheese from Norway to Russia. But we can sell it to Russia, Kazakhstan, China, all those countries in the Caucasus. So I hope you're wrong, that the future of Serbia is brighter than we might fear.
I completely agree with you that this is that Serbia actually has legally an extremely strong position. But the question is, how stable is Serbia? How strong is Serbia in continuing this course? Because you say that you go on television and you speak and you hear about people saying to the president, well, please don't give up a single centimetre of territory. But is he going to hold to that line? Is he going to be stable and insistent on defending Serbia's sovereignty, its territorial integrity, in a way that, as you correctly say, gives Serbia all these tremendous political advantages and economic advantages?
I would be a bit more unsure about this at the time when Hashim Thaci, who is now indicted for war crimes in Hague, was Pristina's prime minister. Please note that I don't say Kosovo's prime minister, I say the regime in Pristina and their prime minister, because even if my country recognized Kosovo, it is not my recognition. But I mean, now we have a new prime minister, Albin Kurti, who is a part of the Veteran Dose movement in Kosovo. And they're much harder on no negotiations with the Pristina government or Pristina authorities and Belgrade, because it's a dialogue Belgrade-Pristina, not Kosovo-Serbia, because it cannot be regarded as a separate nation. So I'm more sure now that the Serbian government has nothing to gain by gaining access to recognizing the Pristina regime. So, since we already have those economic agreement for trade, I mean, maybe they could get some sponsorship or the infrastructure from the EU, some projects like that, more if they gave up territory, but then they'd lose their whole identity. So I think we have quite dark times in Europe now, with the jab and everything. I mean, the governments are forcing people to quite extreme measures. But in Serbia, I mean, I took the jab myself, because I have confidence in Russian and Serbian health authorities. So I took, I'm not sure if I can say the name, but the Russian jab. So it's very relaxed if you come to Serbia now. It's much more relaxed, and they will not close down the whole society like in other countries in Europe. So it's actually good to be a Norwegian in Serbia.
Absolutely. Can I just say, and I think you will agree with me, Christian, that people, I find a lot of people in Britain, for example, that I meet, Serbia has been so demonized that they have a profoundly false image of it. They imagine it to be a very tense and difficult place. And in fact, it's not. And can you say something about your life in Serbia and the lives that people lead there? I mean, the fact that, Belgrade has a beautiful city. It's got a wonderful cuisine. It's got marvellous cafe culture. It's got wonderful art scene. I mean, it's got all of these things, which in my experience, people in the West, far too many people in the West, know very little about.
Yeah, I have to say that at the moment I'm in Norway, because my mom had a heart attack and a brain hemorrhage. So I'm a bit of a nurse. So that's good. But I'm here in Norway at the moment. But I mean, I feel like a fish on land here in this country, in Norway. I mean, I connect so much better with Serbians. So we have, of course, Viktor Orban and everything in Hungary. Maybe we should have a president more like Orban in Serbia. But I mean, it's Aleksandar Vučić, our president in Serbia, is actually playing a good balancing game. And a lot of people are coming, more and more people are coming to Belgrade to enjoy life. And in Belgrade, you'll find that most people speak passable English. I mean, I don't use my English so much on the streets because I speak Serbian. But I mean, it's a fantastic country to live in. And I actually have to tell this also, that I have my own grave place in Belgrade. I got it for free. I got it from the widow of the Yugoslav ambassador to Libya from 1976 to 1980. So I'm going to be with Mr. Marian Petrovski. I'm my friends and my network. And when Serbians, they're contacting me on a daily basis to give thanks for who I am, then I'm really, really at home in Belgrade. And it's much, much safer in Belgrade than in any other European big cities. I mean, the women can go in mini skirts or less without having any fear of being raped. In many parts of Europe, it is not like that. So it's just fantastic.
Certainly not like that in London anymore. Can I just ask, what about, because of course you talked about the fact that as far as most Serbian people are concerned, I mean, they would have nothing to gain by further integration with the EU. Are the people in Serbia who do want full integration with the EU, and who are they, and are they the sort of people who might carry out, well, let's call it by its name, a regime change operation in Serbia? After all, something like that has been done before in Serbia. It happened in the early 2000s, in 2002. So could we have anything like that happen in Serbia again, do you think?
Not with the current government. The opposition in Serbia is weak, to put it bluntly. I mean, Aleksandar Vučić, he has a strong government. And, I mean, you have some COVID protests and everything, but, I mean, nothing too serious. And the problem with these NATO globalists is that they have tremendous amounts of money. Of course, I think many more Serbians, they would know my name instead of the name of the Norwegian ambassador. And, of course, my goal
I'm
is
sure
to
that
have, yes, and my goal is to have a greater influence in Serbia than the Norwegian government. So, of course, I mean, it would be a possibility for a regime change, because the Norwegian government and embassy in Belgrade, actually, we voted twice no to the EU in referendums in 1972 and in 1994. And still the Norwegian embassy in Belgrade, they're working every day for better Euro-Atlantic integration, as they say in a very nice language. And we've had a military attaché since 2001 in Serbia that is pushing and pushing and pushing with Atlantic Council and all these dangerous organizations to push closer ties. But I think the Serbian president has found a good balancing act, like taking the role of the old Yugoslavia again, to make balance between United States and China and Europe. Of course, the European Union is by far the most important trading partner. But I think we have a lot more possibilities to navigate in this landscape if we're not bound to only the European Union.
What about the situation in Bosnia, which is the other area that is perhaps the one that causes concern? I mean, the High Representative is now leaving. He's changed the law of Bosnia to make it, as I understand it, a crime to deny the events in Srebrenica. The situation in Bosnia doesn't look at all stable. Is that something that concerns people in Serbia?
The people I speak mostly to, I mean, the patriotic circles and everything, they're, of course, sympathetic to Bosnia. But I don't see a breakdown in state institutions. In Bosnia, you have the Republika Srpska, the Serbian Republic, and the entity of Croatians and Muslims in the rest of Bosnia and Herzegovina, which is the full name of Bosnia. I don't see an immediate breakdown, especially in the Serbian government there, and they're more or less autonomous. So, of course, it's not stable, not at all, but I hope that the Serbians, at least, in Bosnia and Herzegovina, in the Republika Srpska, can gain some of the stability from Serbia. But of course, it is not at all stable, and we have more and more jihadists in Bosnia and Herzegovina, and also in Kosovo and Metohija. We've had a lot of Albanians who have been fighting for the Islamic State. But I mean, as long as Serbia stays on the path of international law, there is not too much pressure that can be exercised.
I think the other major difference between now and the 1990s also is that Serbia has, when it provided it sticks to the path of international law, it has friends, in the sense that in the 1990s it was very isolated. I mean, Russia was in chaos, and of course China was not a geopolitical force in those days. So, I mean, that also, I mean, you talked about Vucic following the sort of line that, you know, the old Yugoslavia used to do, of being able to balance the power blocks. That works when there are power blocks. There weren't in the 90s, and there are now. And I think that probably helps the Serbs, Serbia, maintain this balancing act, which is very difficult to follow before. How do people in Serbia feel about keeping this balance? I mean, are they more drawn to the EU? I mean, what sort of people would want to see Serbia join the EU? I mean, are they young people? I remember there was that youth group that was organised back in the early 2000s, which played a big role in bringing Milosevic down. I mean, does that still exist? Is it still a force?
No, that was a regime change operation.
But
they had their fist as a symbol.
I remember
it was completely paid by state actors, National Endowment for Democracy, CIA, and those kind of guys. So it is not so strong. But I mean, for Serbians, most Serbians, they're not political beings like we are, you know. You think when you're on the Duran, everyone cares about politics. No. Most people in Serbia, they care about what they're going to eat next day. And there is a lot of desperation also. But I mean, in many ways, Serbians are better prepared for crisis than Western European nations. I mean, they had their sanctions in the 90s. So they're more robust, but I mean most Serbians they're not concerned about blocks and everything. Actually, we had the Chinese vaccine. That's why we're in Serbia is one of the leading countries in Europe. I think only beaten by your country, Alexander, United Kingdom. So of course, forced like jabs, of course. I mean, there is no one in Serbia that would ever think about that. And I think they're pretty good in this crisis, while a lot of other countries in Europe, they're in chaos. But I mean, of course, there's a big international pressure against Serbia. For instance, I have to mention the wife of the Pristina Prime Minister, Albin Kurti. She's actually 100% Norwegian, and she's working at the University of Oslo and the Institute for International Affairs in Oslo to work against extremism. And she's actually married to maybe one of the biggest extremists in the Balkans. So, I mean, but this is maybe also time to challenge the Norwegian government to play a bigger role for the dialogue between Serbians and Albanians. Of course, without giving up as much as a square centimeter in Kosovo and Metohija. But I mean, my concern when it comes to Kosovo is not those Serbians close to Serbia. I mean, if you're familiar with the geography in Kosovo and Metohija, you have Kosovska Mitrovica, which is almost an entire Serbian city on the north of the Ibar River. But I mean, you have a lot of Serbians down in enclaves that are living desperate lives. So from July 1st, we have a roaming agreement that we can use mobile phones without any additional costs in North Macedonia, in Kosovo, in Albania, in Montenegro, Bosnia-Herzegovina, and Serbia. So this is actually pretty good.
Because this is the thing, actually, and I'm glad you brought this up, because, of course, with this lady who is now this Norwegian lady who's married to the Prime Minister of the Pristina regime, and let's call it the Pristina regime. I agree. I think that is the correct and proper name for that entity. But, I mean, she is an expert, as she says, in extremism. If you go to any Western institution, any Western newspaper, you will always find that when they talk about extremism in the Balkans, it is Serb extremism. Whereas in reality, and this is my own experience of the Balkans, it is the exact opposite. The extremism has always been directed against Serbia and not by Serbia. So if one takes the Yugoslav wars of the 90s, if you look at who actually were the primary victims of those wars, they were Serbs. They were driven out of Croatia. They are under pressure in Kosovo. They are perhaps under less pressure now in Bosnia. But obviously they're also isolated and under pressure there. And it's always seemed to me that Westerners, when they talk about self-determination in the Balkans, they mean self-determination by everyone except Serbs, and they mean self-determination by countries at the expense of Serbs. Would you say that this is a correct assessment of it, as yes. somebody who was there as a witness during those wars?
Mm-hmm. Yes, completely. I mean, this is 100% correct. I mean, as I say, in Belgrade, it's a very open city for foreigners. And you'd be most welcome. I see Alex is complaining about internet sometimes in Cyprus and everywhere else, but we have excellent fiber optic internet. And of course, you, as I've said before, you're most welcome, both of you, to eat the best lamb in the world in Belgrade, and we'll have some Serbian rakia. Not to get drunk, but I mean, this liquor to have a bit of taste. So it is sad to see that at least regime media in Western Europe, they still have this notion. But I mean, I see more and more people waking up to a new reality.
I entirely agree with that. I completely agree with that. So overall, I would say, Christian, you've given about Serbia an optimistic picture. You talk about a stable country, a country that's found its way. A president who may not be a man of tremendous charisma, maybe, but who seems to have a very skillful sense of how to maintaining the balance, and a country that is going forward, even though it's surrounded by NATO and the EU, who put it under constant pressure. So in a way, the siege that they are applying against Serbia, because I do sometimes feel that it is a siege, it would seem isn't working.
I'm often saying that the war is not over, but they're using euros and dollars instead of weapons these days. It is the same war, but I mean, as you say, I mean, there's different blocks now. I mean, I'm not saying that you should reject the European Union and all the tremendous trading opportunities that are there, but I mean, it is actually a good situation, even if many Serbians are struggling to put food on the table.
Well, can I just say about that, Christian, you'll find many people in Britain who are struggling to put food on the table also, more so now over the last year and a bit than I've perhaps ever known or seen. I mean, it is, and businesses which are under extreme pressure. And from what you say, Serbia has managed this much better than nearly every other European country has, and perhaps better than Britain, because, of course, in Britain, we did get the high inoculation rate that you mentioned. But that's also come with multiple lockdowns, eccentric and inconsistent policies, muddled decision making, which in Serbia you seem to have avoided. So I wonder whether, always relative to the starting position, I mean, Britain is a rich country, Serbia is a much less rich country, or has been, whether in fact economically perhaps Serbia might be in better shape than Britain is in some ways.
Yes, in many ways. And what is more, the Serbian people, they also have their Serbian Orthodox faith. I mean, the Serbian Orthodox Church is not as strong as it should be. And I'm coming there as a Protestant Christian to try to build the bridges between the Protestants and the Orthodox, which is a fantastic opportunity that I have. Because Serbians should be proud of their heritage and their faith. And they have a lot in place. So I'm asking the viewers of the Duran to join me in my prayer for a revitalization of Christian faith in Serbia. Because, of course, there is nepotism, there is authoritarianism from the government, there is corruption. But I think if people return and find their Serbian Orthodox faith, I mean, these things would diminish.
I entirely agree with that. I'm entirely of the same view as you on this. I'm going to just finish by asking about one other country in the region, which is Montenegro, which has always had connections with Serbia. Now, as a Greek, I always used to think of Montenegro and Serbia as being essentially one nation. I was particularly upset, actually, when Montenegro broke away. And, of course, there was a change of government there a short while ago with a new election. But from what I've heard, the situation in Montenegro is very unstable. Do you know anything about that? How is the new government doing? Is it getting closer to Serbia? Is it friends with Serbia now?
Well, the former president, Prime Minister Milo Djukanovic, he was not a good man. I mean, this new government now is, of course, not stable. But, I mean, it's difficult to define who is a Montenegrin and who is a Serbian. For instance,
I can't tell the difference, to be honest. Well, I mean, I would have said a few years ago, and I'm speaking now straightforwardly, and Montenegrins who might disagree, I apologise to them. But I thought of Montenegrins as Serbs. I thought of it as essentially a region.
Let me tell you a funny story there.
Yeah.
Because I have a good friend. He's American. He was a U.S. chaplain. And he is identifying himself. He's living in the city of Nikšić in Montenegro. And his mother is a Serbian and his father is a Serbian. And his mother came now back from America to die over the last years in Montenegro. And she's saying, "My dear son, don't forget that I baptized you in the Serbian Orthodox Church." But he's saying that he is Montenegrin. So it depends in what context you ask. But of course, there's great fellowship between Serbia and Montenegro.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Christian, you've been incredibly wonderful on this program. You've talked to us about many things. Can I completely, again, fully endorse what you said about let's hope that they find back their religious faith? I'm a bit concerned to hear that they've been declining because Serbia has stuck by its church and its Christianity throughout many years, many tribulations under the Ottomans, the communists, whatever. Though the communists, it must be said, in Yugoslavia were relatively restrained about religious matters, at least in the later years of Yugoslavia.
Yeah, I can teach you a Serbian greeting. We collect our three fingers in Serbia and say Pomaže Bog, God help us, which is the Trinity, the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. So actually my site in Serbian, it's ohrabrenje.com, which is encouragement, and I am sure that God has given me the task of being a source of encouragement for the Serbian people.
Thank you for that, Christian. And I would also say, speaking for ourselves and coming to rather more banal and prosaic things, I very, very much look forward to that dinner in Belgrade with yourself when we will enjoy roast lamb. Absolutely. I used to go to Belgrade a lot in the old days. It was one of my favourite cities, perhaps in the Balkans. Well, definitely in the Balkans, my favourite city, bar none. It's a marvellous place. And people who haven't been there, I don't know what they're missing. It's an absolutely wonderful place. And as you rightly said, extremely warm, generous, wonderful people. Alex, anything you wanted to add?
Before we close out the show, can you give a couple of minutes context, Christian, for our viewers? What happened in Kosovo, a little brief history, which brings us to today, just to provide some context.
I'm sorry, I started with my intro and saying that I'm a former NATO aggressor, which is true. Because Norway, they said, okay, this guy, he's been writing for the Associated Press, he knows a bit of English, we'll send him down to Kosovo after the 1999 aggression, as the NATO spokesman, not for Norway, but for NATO. I didn't get that position because my German boss, Colonel Horst Pieper, took my job, which was okay. So I was actually in charge of the internet in the early days in 2000. So at the end of my service in July 2000, we had 60,000 hits on a daily basis on our site, which was quite tremendous at that time. But I mean, we went to war against Yugoslavia, which was Serbia and Montenegro. Montenegro got their independence in 2006 on conditions that not one independent country would ever recognize. I mean, we demanded complete access to land, sea and air without criminal responsibility or compensation. I mean, when NATO goes into countries, they have this SOFA agreement, Standard of Forces Agreement, where Serbia had to agree on complete access and a referendum in Kosovo after 3 years about their independence. But I mean, according to United Nations Security Council Resolution 1244, UNSCR 1244, it is extremely important to note that nothing has changed in the rule of law in Kosovo. So we basically bombed this country for 78 days, and in many ways, I would say that Yugoslavia won because of the legal status of Kosovo. Of course, in practice, I mean, Kosovo for now is a lost territory. But I mean, I would continue to insist on the not giving away one square inch, not one square centimeter of this territory. It will come a day when they cannot sustain themselves. I mean, they're not a part of a passport regime in Schengen. So Kosovo Albanians, they're not able to travel in Europe like Serbians can, because their passport is recognized. But I mean, when you have a state that is more or less built on organized crime in Kosovo, I mean, there is no reason to accept them. What will the solution be? I don't know. Will we see some kind of confederation? Bosnia-Herzegovina, Macedonia, Kosovo, something like that. But I mean, one thing is for sure, the foreign policies in this unity or country or federation or confederation would have to be run from Belgrade.
I completely agree. I mean, Belgrade is the centre. It's the only place. I'm entirely in agreement by that. And by the way, on the subject of Kosovo, or rather not the entity that exists there, but the way in which social structures have collapsed and organised crime has become predominant there. We have the overspill of that in Britain, where unfortunately it's become very much part of the route now in which drugs pass through to Britain. Go on.
Was that the goal, though, Alexander? Christian, was the goal when they bombed Serbia, was the goal to break off Kosovo? I mean, is that what they wanted?
Yes,
they wanted to carve out a state, a small state?
Yeah. Yes, of course. I mean, this is the if you look on Wikipedia, they say Rambouillet negotiations at the French castle of Rambouillet. But it was not a negotiation. It was a dictate.
Yeah,
where
absolutely.
We demanded that there would be a referendum within 3 years for the status of Kosovo, where only people in Kosovo could vote. And of course, Serbia has always been Serbian, but after the Second World War, there was a lot of Albanians coming from Albania. And now the Albanians are in 90% majority in Kosovo. But I mean, with the heritage and all the monasteries, I need to show you my shirt. It says Nema Predaja. You see, you have a map of Kosovo here. And Nema Predaja means no surrender. I mean, there is absolutely no reason for the Serbian government to give up anything for the prospect of maybe gaining some benefits in the European Union. So this is also an encouragement for the Serbians who are watching this. Of course, I'm going to share it with my email list, 4,500 people, and I'll write an article on the Duran on my page. And this conversation, I think, will be a great encouragement for Serbians and others.
Indeed. Can I just add something to what Christian has said? I think the other objective of that war in 1999 was to overthrow the Serbian government in order to integrate Serbia into the Euro-Atlantic institutions. And eventually, not through that war itself, but remember all that business about being able to send troops all over Serbia, which Christian is talking about. I mean, it would have ended, if they'd achieved their objective, in the complete occupation of Serbia. They failed. They didn't achieve that. Serbia was able to defeat that effort in 1999. So they tried a regime change, and it succeeded, but only up to a very limited point, because though the government changed, and though the people who came into power were very Atlanticist and European-focused, in the end, the weight of opinion in Serbia pushed them aside. So I think that was the objective, and I think it failed. And that's why we see this very unstable situation in the Balkans with all these very unstable countries, not Serbia itself. I want to make that very clear, Christian. All these countries around, and this unfinished business of trying to get Serbia into Europe and into NATO, which is clear, is resisting. And it seems, from what you tell us, Christian, very successfully and very effectively.
Yeah, and let me reiterate that this is not a war that Western Europe has given up, and NATO and the EU. It's an ongoing war. But I am sure that Serbia is better and better prepared to win this war.
Well, from what you've told us, it's winning. It's actually winning the war. I mean, it's stable, it's prosperous, it's efficient, and it's got law and diplomacy and friends. So it's winning.
One final question, and we'll wrap it up. To provide some balance, what about the Albanians in Kosovo? What is their position right now? What are their feelings towards Belgrade, towards the EU, NATO? Can you provide any insight there?
The Albanians are desperate, of course. But I mean, they're being sold a lie from their leaders. Now with the new Prime Minister, Albin Kurti, he's maybe better to fight corruption and everything, but he doesn't want to have anything to do. I mean, he actually blocked a bus from my organization, humanitarian organization, Stub Kralja Stefana, from entering Kosovo Metro here to see the monasteries. So, I mean, I wouldn't like to be an Albanian in Kosovo. I mean, economically, I mean, it's desperate. And their main income is the diaspora that is giving money to the Albanians and, to be honest, organized crime. I mean, there's no viable business in Kosovo at the moment, unfortunately. So it's a very desperate situation for Kosovo Albanians. And also Kosovo Serbs, of course, in enclaves.
Well,
okay. Any other questions, Alexander, Christian? Yeah. Questions, comments, so we can wrap it up?
Anything from you, Christian? Anything you want to add to the things you've said?
I'm just happy that God has put me in this place to do this kind of work. And I would love for more people to sign up for my email updates. You'll find the links below. Because we cannot trust social media. We cannot trust Facebook. We cannot trust YouTube even. Even if your channel has not been taken down. But to stay in touch. Let's stay in touch.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. And with that that final note from Christian, you'll find all the information as to where to reach him and where to sign up for his newsletter, everything in the description box down below. Alexander Merkurs in London, thank you very much. And Christian Kars in Norway at the moment. but resides in Belgrade, Serbia. Thank you very much, Christian, for your time and for your insights. Take care.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Take care.